Sister, the advice and culture podcast that brings you straight talking but non-judgmental chat from people who have been there, tried that, and have your best interests at heart. I'm Lisa Marie, or Liss, but you may know me online as Last Year's Girl. I'm a blogger, writer, and semi-professional big sister. Every episode, I team up with creative guests to discuss your dilemmas, share what we're working on, and hopefully recommend your favourite new music, books and things, and share the stuff that we've learned along the way. I suppose when you hold yourself out to be the internet's advice-giving big sister, it was only ever going to be a matter of time before somebody sent in a dating question. The problem? I'm now almost 10 years married, and have been known to remark that if anything ever happened to my husband, I'd happily start collecting cats rather than put myself out there again. Dating in 2019 seems exhausting to this extroverted introvert, and I really admire those of you with the bravery and the energy to put yourself out there again and again, making yourself vulnerable to new people in the hope that you might find a connection. So, to celebrate our first dating advice question, I've called in the experts. Monstrous Regiment is an Edinburgh-based micropress with a passion for intersectional feminism and sexuality, and for publishing marginalised writers. Founded by MSc publishing graduates Ellen Desmond and Lauren Nicodemus while still at uni in 2017, Monstrous Regiment's mission is to curate bold and fresh content, the stuff that they feel tends to be missing from bookshelves. Their biggest project to date is The Bible, an anthology of personal narratives and essays about bisexuality. The first volume, published in 2018, completely sold out, as readers all over the world connected with the idea of a volume of diverse perspectives on the often forgotten B in LGBTQ+, including mine. That's why, this year, they turned back to Kickstarter to crowdfund a whole new printing run, as well as new testimonials, a second standalone volume of all new essays by writers across the UK and beyond on various aspects of the bisexual experience. On today's episode, I'm joined by Lauren from Monstrous Regiment, along with Rebecca Wojtarska, a writer whose essay appears in New Testimonials. Rebecca works for Edinburgh University Press and is the co-chair of the Scottish Society of Young Publishers, SYP Scotland, as well as the founder of Haunt Publishing, a micropress with a focus on Gothic fiction. Let's get stuck in.
I am Lauren Nicodemus from Monstrous Regiment Publishing. So we're a small indie press and we do magazines and nonfiction books all around the themes of intersectional feminism, sexuality, and gender. And yeah, we're a little company based in Leith, and we did an anthology of essays and narratives about bisexuality, and Leith has a wonderful essay in the first point of that. And then Rebecca, who's also with us today, has an essay in the second volume of that, so we have fantastic writers all around today.
Very excited to see the second volume. And Rebecca, tell us a bit about yourself as well.
I work at Edinburgh University Press on the journals team. So yeah, I kind of found out about the project from the first anthology, and I was just even saying to these guys just earlier how amazing it is to have that kind of representation in publishing. So I really wanted to get involved and submitted on to the next one, and now I'm here.
Mm-hmm. And you have a publishing imprint as well, am I right?
Yes, I run, in my spare time, I run a little press called Haunt Publishing, and it's basically Gothic literature, because I don't think there's enough of contemporary Gothic literature out there. A lot of it's kind of neo-Victorian. So yeah, that's Haunt.
Cool.
Exciting. So obviously what brought all four of us together is The Bible. How did the first anthology come about? I guess this is a question for Lauren and Ellen. I mean, what was it that made you think, oh, anthology of narratives about bisexuality, that is an excellent idea? Which it is, but what made you think that?
Well, a few different things, I guess. From a personal side, I was at that time kind of in the process of coming out to myself and exploring whether or not I was bi and what that meant to me. And I had never really had much contact with the community. I knew a little bit about it, but I wanted to research it. And then also, I was reading a lot about, like, a lot of discussion about there not being enough representation, issues of bi erasure. And the more I started to read into it in my own kind of, like, trying to figure myself out, the more I really wanted to explore this, share it with other people, and get more of an awareness out there. So Ellen and I kind of were in we were doing a publishing degree together, which is how we met, and we started chatting about ideas for books that we wish were out there that we weren't really seeing, and we had been kind of inspired as well by a lot of other really vibrant indie projects that were coming up around Edinburgh, and like just very small presses that were crowdfunding or just getting these books out in a really grassroots fashion. And so we kind of looked at that and said, you know, we could do something like that. So what would we do if we did? And then I came up with the pun to call it a Bible. and then Ellen was like, that's great, let's do it. So yeah, that's kind of how it came about for us.
And then how did that become a second anthology? So obviously we had the first one came out and the crowdfunder was a success and met all its goals and we had the book. And then what made you decide, you know, this story isn't finished?
A lot of it was the response that we got from the first volume, which was really, really positive. And a lot of people talked to us about how, you know, reading this was like the first time they had felt really seen, and they related to it so much that made them feel really validated and visible and stuff. And you know, we were talking to quite a few other people who had stories that were really interesting, and so we just thought, you know, there's so much more room for exploring this further and like other intersections, and we wanted to get more male bi voices as well, because they tend to be like a little bit more silenced, and it's sometimes easier for women to come forward and talk about being bi and stuff. So yeah, there were just a lot more perspectives out there, and we originally were thinking of just finding a few more essays and doing an expanded version of the Bible. But then once we started kind of talking to people and looking for submissions, we realized we could do a whole other book, that there is enough out there to warrant that. So yeah, we decided that there is the need and the hunger for more stories like this and more kind of different intersections and different experiences around bisexuality. So yeah, we decided to do another book.
And that's New Testimonials, which is an even better pun than the first one.
We're running with that theme, just working the pun for all it's worth.
And what stage are we at with that now? So the Kickstarter campaign is done, and as well as funding this second volume, you're going to be reprinting the first one as well. So where are we at just now?
We are in the final stages of production. So yes, we did another crowdfund campaign, a lot of great support for that, and so that was successful. And right now we are doing the last bits of proofreading, getting the internals all ready to send to the printer. And it will come out in mid-June, I believe, on the 17th, we're getting it delivered. So just a few more weeks, and then we'll be able to get it out to all of our Kickstarter backers and get it out to shops and, yeah, start selling it and start having events. Yeah, so it's very exciting. It's kind of like the crunch time right now where we have to make sure before sending it to the printers.
Well, it's awesome that you've been able to make time to talk to me. And one of the things that we're going to do today is address a listener question which was sent into the podcast, which is super exciting. I guess one thing that I wanted to talk about before we got to that, though, so the question that we were sent was around dating and dating as a bisexual. And I think it was really funny that my first reaction when I read this was, oh my God, I can't answer this. I'm an old married lady. Nobody cares. And then I sent it to Lauren and Ellen, and your response was, well, I don't know if we're really qualified to answer this either. And I just find it really funny. And I don't know if there's something about being bisexual where there's like this sort of feeling that we're not qualified, we're not good enough. I mean, there's a line in one of the early lines in Rebecca's essay that really struck a chord with me. It was talking about trying on bisexuality as a label, and you know, it's sort of ill-fitting clothes and it doesn't really fit me. And I'm pretty sure that my own essay kind of covered similar ground, you know, as a bisexual who's married to a man and isn't, you know, in the market for it, and does that make my identity any less valid? I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I think your essay actually quite inspired me to write my own, because we have that experience of, you know, trying on that label, and then, you know, you do end with, in my case, a cis white man, and you kind of
same
wonder, are people gonna listen to me as much as they would listen to someone who's maybe ended up with a woman, or someone who's, you know, identifies as gay. So it's just kind of finding your place in the community and then feeling empowered to be able to share your story where necessary. And I think that's, it was actually your essay that made me think.
Oh, oh, that's amazing.
yeah,
oh, tune up.
Being bisexual, there is already kind of that sense of, oh, I'm not quite enough for the larger communities. Like, I'm not straight enough to fit in with the, you know, heteronormativity, but I'm not gay enough to fit in with the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we feel like we're not really, like, allowed, or we're not valid enough. And so I think maybe that kind of sense of questioning yourself and your place maybe kind of leads into that idea of like, oh, I don't know if I'm qualified to answer this question, or I don't know if my experience is enough. And so, yeah, I think part of what we wanted to do with the books is to say, like, you don't have to have this outlined, very specific one experience to be a valid bisexual. And there are so many different varieties of what that looks like, and how that plays out in your life. And you know what that identity leads you toward, and they're all worth talking about, and they're all valid. So I think giving ourselves some credit and some support to say, like, our experiences are real and they count.
Yeah.
And because, you know, they might not be what people think they are, or like what people imagine what it means to be a bisexual, that doesn't mean that they're not important. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our listener question, the person who sent it in didn't actually use the word bisexual to identify themselves, but because they talked about pursuing somebody male and pursuing somebody female, that's why I thought it would be good to get bisexual voices on to chat about this. So I'm going to read that out just now. The listener refers to themselves as way too old for this shit, which I sympathise with. She's actually identified. No, she has identified herself as a bi woman. What am I talking about? Okay, so way too old for this shit. I am a bi woman in my 30s who still feels totally new to the dating game. I have a massive crush on one of my friends, but she's having a shit time and I don't want to be that guy. So I started dating to keep me right, and now I have met a man I might like. I know that she may never have feelings for me, and this man does, but I've made it a bigger deal in my head and cannot see the wood for the trees. Who among us has not been confused in that way?
I think there's a bigger fear, or like I've certainly felt it, that somehow you're more likely to be rejected by the same sex.
Mm.
So it's like, yeah, I think if there's a bit of like hesitancy around that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think
at least in my experience with women, it's a lot harder sometimes to tell, like, is this a romantic vibe, mm-hmm. or is this just like a really good friend vibe? Because I feel like the way we're socialized with female friendships, you can be a lot more closer and, like, happy and have those, like, a bit more of an intimacy.
Tell your female friends that they're beautiful, which I never stop doing. I tell female strangers on the bus that they're beautiful.
And so then when you come to a point where, you know, you are crushing on a woman that you're friends with, especially if you already have that kind of, like, closeness, it's hard to tell sometimes where the line is. Where, like, when does this become romantic? Like, what is, how do I tell? I know with me and Ellen, when we were kind of getting together, we were friends, and she was crushing really hard on me, and I liked her as well, but we just danced around it for the longest time. And we, like, flirt a little bit over text, but then just be like, oh, haha, like, oh, that's really sweet, thanks. It took us ages to actually have a talk about, like, would you like to go on a date with me? And even after we had that talk, the next time we hung out, we weren't sure if it was a date or not, because we kind of said, oh, that might be nice to do sometime, but then we didn't actually say, this is that time.
This is the formal date.
So yeah, sometimes it can be a little bit hard to identify what's happening unless you have a really open and specific conversation about it. And I think it is hard to have those types of conversations.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes you really have to. And maybe in this situation where, you know, it is a close friend and they do have like a bond and an intimacy already, it might take a really honest conversation to find out if there's any reciprocation or any chance of reciprocation.
Yeah.
One that coming up later, once you've established a relationship with someone else as well, it almost feels like a good kind of time to process it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think my first vibe when I was reading it, I mean, obviously, she talks about not wanting to be that guy when there's, you know, there's some whatever's going on with her friend, and then you've got somebody else and there's clearly feelings there. And I wonder, so this kind of goes at the line that you guys all love from my particular essay that we keep sharing is talking about not picking a side but picking a person. And I wonder if in these circumstances, you know, the spark's there with the guy, there is, you know, it's almost like there's something there. Is that worth pursuing when the alternative, you don't know what's going on? Yeah.
It's a really tough one.
Yeah, it is tough. I know what she means about not wanting to, like, bring something like that up when your friend is dealing with a rough time. I guess it's hard to say without knowing, like, what's actually happening.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I think I would almost say it might be worth trying to talk about it if it's something that she is going to worry about.
And if it might become a problem later.
Yeah.
Things kind of get in the way.
Yeah, and it's maybe not entirely fair to the guy that she's starting a relationship with, if he is going to get really invested in it.
Yeah.
For her to still be, you know, kind of holding on to these feelings for her friend. And at least, you know, if she does get a no, maybe that will allow her to be kind of close that chapter.
Yeah.
And say, no, you know, this is not going to happen, that's okay, and she can kind of pursue their other relationship with kind of a clearer mind and heart.
Yeah.
But yeah, that does require a tough conversation.
I wonder if she's out to the female friend as well, because that then makes it even tougher, because it's almost like it's coming from nowhere, and with bisexuality still being so misunderstood, it's a terrifying conversation.
Yeah, and I went, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think a lot of people can reassess your motives behind your actions, or friendly,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
bisexual or gay, and it does make it a lot more tough, because I found myself like checking my behavior to the point of being like cold with people, so they don't, because I'm paranoid that they're gonna have some prejudice that I haven't seen, and you know, it just get more difficult if they're not already out, definitely. Mm,
yeah and I would wonder as well if her friend is straight, or if she knows that her friend likes women. Like, is there an obvious kind of like potential for there to be a relationship, or is it something that would be kind of very unexpected for the friend?
So many variables.
Yeah.
I think that was always what terrified me when I started to realise that I was attracted to women. I had no idea how you would start having those conversations with people, because, you know, the default, heterosexuality is still seen as the default to a huge degree, and you do kind of feel like, well, I'm having to get past that first barrier before I even do the awkward, oh, I like you thing. And that is really, really scary. And I think that's why, you know, most of my experiences with women have involved alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
And I think reading Rebecca's essay, I think, you know, yeah, I was seeing the parallels.
It definitely helps, but not in a good
No.
Getting drunk in clubs and bars and approaching people that I liked and talking to them, and you know, a lot of kind of women do group together on nights out, and I just get drunk and say, do you like women? I can confirm the success rate was 0%. And to be honest, if I was approached in that way, no. Yeah. I'll try and leave alcohol out of it if possible, I would say.
I think that's another case for making it so important to break down the barriers and for anthologies like the Bible to exist. You know, it does open up conversation and make it so much easier to talk about things like this.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in, you know, the kind of early years of getting to grips with it and realising that you're attracted to women or men, you know. So it is, you know, it is kind of touchy, but it just feels so good to know that there is this community that are just out and proud and loud, and you know, we're getting our kind of say, and I'm just in awe of you guys.
I know, so I think it was social media that brought me into contact with Monstrous Regiment and with Lauren and Ellen in the first place. And I was digging through my email because I wanted to work out what the first correspondence was, and I think it was I actually emailed you guys to say I have an idea for an essay, and it was like super formal, like, hi there, I was just thinking, is this a perspective that might work for you? And it's amazing, like, even that initial contact has sort of, you know, I'm a lot more open about who I am on social media now, and I think it's amazing, you know?
Yeah, I think so, and I think there's an expectation if you're bisexual, but then, you know, Fred's ended up with a man, that you're not going to talk about it, and that you will kind of take a backseat, and I think, you know, anthologies such as yours do empower us to say, no, like, our experience is valid and should contribute towards the overall conversation.
Yeah. And it's a huge part of my identity. I mean, obviously I'm in a committed relationship, and I know you are too, Rebecca, but it's not the same as saying this is a part of me that doesn't exist just because I'm not going out in the pool anymore.
Yeah, like it only exists when you're acting on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I put in the essay, and a friend said to me once, I think it's come to me, it's in the attraction, not the action.
Yeah.
True.
That is another quote that deserves to be on a print. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And even on the opposite side, woman. And like I've dated men, but I've never been in a relationship with a man. And so for me, it's almost like this other side of, you know, I'm kind of like all on the sapphic.
Yes, people see you as lesbian.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, it doesn't bother me, I guess, if they just kind of assume that, like, you know, it's a lovely group and I don't mind being associated with them. Like, cool. But yeah, it is, again, it's something that if it's not visible in your life and your lifestyle and who you're with, it's something that people don't necessarily know, and you do have to explain it to them if they don't already know who you are. So it's, yeah, either side of it is kind of always a process of including this side of your experience that isn't always super evident, but it's still there.
And yeah.
It's still, yeah.
And it almost kind of feels a bit weird to talk about, because, you know, you don't talk about having sex when you're introducing yourself to strangers, you know, and but it almost is like the sort of people that you're attracted to, it's like you can, it, people have to think about you having sex, and that makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's
in
the name, like, again, it's always made me uncomfortable, like saying bisexual, because I know people immediately go to that sex bit.
Yeah.
That's just like one aspect of it. There's so many more like parts to it, and people focus on that, and I wonder if it is because of the term itself, or but they all have sexual in, so it's not just exclusive.
Yeah,
to
I know.
Yeah, well, I think like overall kind of any non-hetero identity is over-sexualized.
Yeah.
Where it's just, and maybe it's just kind of like this prurient fascination or something that people have when they're outside of that, where they're just really kind of curious about it, about the details of people's sex lives and stuff. But there does tend to be like an emphasis on the sexual aspects of it, whereas it is, you know, just as much about just personal connection and who you click with, who you think is cute, and, you know, like, just totally aside
from that. And making a life together. Once you get to that point, you know, there's a lot of being in a long-term relationship, regardless of who it's with, it's not sexy. It's about, you know, getting the bills paid, and whose turn is it to put the bins out and clean the cat litter boxes.
Yeah, who you want to spend your life with and who you're compatible with to just, like, spend every day together like that and be a team. Just,
yeah.
Yeah. Who's your teammate?
Just get reduced to the sexual element. And I think that's one off-putting thing for people coming out.
Mm. I wanted to talk about, Rebecca, in your essay, you talk about your experience using apps, and I was wondering, you know, what that was like, and if you had any particular horror stories that you wanted to share.
Gypsy gossip.
Because having now been with my husband for 12, 13 years, that apps were not a thing. I mean, we met on MySpace, but that wasn't the purpose of MySpace.
I think it's actually maybe the core reason why I fully came out was because of the apps. Because at the time, I was living in Cambridge, and I've been attracted to women since I was in primary school. But it was very much, where do you meet people that you know for sure might be interested in, you know, forging a connection or a relationship or whatever. And I didn't have that there. And it was very sadly on a night out, and I did have a boyfriend at the time. But I got drunk and I did actually kiss a woman, which again is not the best way to come out. Don't do that. But it kind of made me realize that I wasn't happy in that relationship for one.
Mm.
It made me kind of question aspects of my personality. But it did make me realise that I just want to come out. And the apps made it more possible because it's something there. You know, people are there for hopefully the same thing.
Yeah.
Because you can choose. Actually, it's quite limiting. It says, oh, it was when I went on, it was Tinder and Match.com. You pick either women or men, which is quite limiting, but hopefully they'll develop that. But so yeah, I went on them both, and turns out there aren't that many queer people in Cambridge. So, so I was like, oh, they're all.
So that's why you're in Edinburgh.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a bit, you kind of have to look further afield and be open to a long distance relationship, and you just get a lot of intrusive questions is like my biggest takeaway, in a way that I've not experienced in straight relationship forming scenarios.
Mm.
So, you know, straight away, you know, what do you identify as? Are you a lesbian? Are you bi? As soon as you say you're bi, they like unmatch you. And it's really sad because they think that you're like a bit of an uncertain bet in a way. But that doesn't make sense because I'd be an uncertain bet regardless, because you never know how it's going to work out and whether you can click.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels weird that people just associate bisexuality with that and not people with that.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, you know, what knickers are you wearing? And I'm a big prude, so I was like...
What?
Honestly, really intrusive things. And I found it quite off-putting. So I would go straight in for, you know, just questions about music and try and get to know someone that way.
Yeah.
I was finding a lot of times, like there was one woman who I absolutely adored. I thought she was beautiful. She loved the Beatles. She had a Beatles sleeve. I was like, you know, this is, I live too far away. So I was like, this is going great. And then like a couple of months in, I was thinking, I'm going to ask to meet. And she's like, I'm engaged.
Oh.
So within that time, she'd already met someone, and it just seemed so fast for everyone else and so slow for me.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's a result of apps and things just move faster now, but the whole thing just felt quite dizzying for me and a bit kind of off-putting. And, you know, it just, yeah, I kind of went off it after that. But another factor... because I was like really excited making my profiles, and this is how I started doing selfies. And it was my best friend at the time who helped me set up all my profiles, who is now actually my partner. So it's a bit of an anecdote that he helped me.
Aww.
But I ended up finding him instead.
I just, the whole thing just seems exhausting to me. And I have a very close relative who is going through that just now, and you know, she's goes out on dates and it's like you have to introduce yourself and do your full life story before you can even have fun. And it's a an older relative as well, so I think it's probably particularly tough. But I just feel like if I was at that stage, I would just start hoarding cats and just not bother. It's like, you know, I found one person and that's great, and if anything happens to him, 20 years of cats I can.
Yeah, just the cat.
I went through like a cycle of trying dating apps, like maybe once every year or so I would try it for a few weeks, and then I would be like, hey, this is terrible. And yeah, I found it really stressful for me, and like at that point I was only like looking at men because I wasn't aware that I was bi yet, really. And yeah, I just, it felt like a very forced way to get to know people for me. And I felt very kind of like I wasn't ready to show them who I was, because I didn't know if I liked them yet, but I didn't know how to get to know them without...
Like, you're trying to get them to like you, but there's a kind of falseness to that.
Yeah.
Because you're just presenting the bit you think they would like about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of culture with it, of it's kind of your identity before your personality, and the identity that you have is either a yes or no, which is a bit of a shame. And that's why we're saying, when as soon as a lot of people know you're bisexual, they instantly don't even want to get to know your personality. But it can be great for hookups. Like, a lot of people, you know, use Tinder for that. But I think I was just too much of a soppy romantic about it all. I had it in my head I was going to find, you know, my future wife and meet the one, and realise quickly no one uses Tinder for that.
Yeah, I finally, the last time, my last round of online dating, I finally, like, opened my settings to women as well, and so I started chatting with a few women, and I immediately just, like, found them nicer to talk to. Like, I have been just barking up the wrong tree with men on those, I guess, because, yeah, as soon as I started chatting with the women, I was like, this is so much more fun. Like, I just enjoy talking to them more, which, maybe, is an indicator of why I'm now with
him. I mean, certainly as an observer to online dating culture, it just seems to be endless dick pics. So that's obviously not going to, well, probably it's less likely to be a problem if you're speaking to women.
Yeah, very true. I think that was the shock for me, though, because I expect instant dirty messages from men, which shows a bit of a prejudice on my part, and I think I was shocked when women went down that road straight away. Yeah, and I'm like, well, why can't we be as filthy as, like, you know, men? But it was a bit of a learning curve for me about online digital culture and what people want out of it.
Yeah, seems like there is a very specific culture, and just like how people expect you to act and be you.
Yeah,
I definitely didn't crack that. I didn't understand it. I was like, I don't know how to do this.
I think you learn a lot about yourself when you do it.
And yeah.
Your expectations of people.
Yeah.
Whether and if that's unfair. So, definite learning curve.
I'm not sure how much of that is going to be helpful to way too old for this shit, but hopefully... Hopefully she realises that she's not alone and that dating is a great big mess and we just muddle through it as best we can. So anything that involves people is always going to be a bit messy.
Yeah, that's very true.
But I hope she figures it out and finds happiness with either one of them, with somebody else. I'm sure she'll be fine. So this show is called From Your Big Sister, and I don't know if you guys are big sisters, but I always like to ask people if they have, you know, like a bit of big sisterly advice for listeners.
Oh, that's tough. I just dropped off my little brother at the train station as well.
Oh, was he up visiting? Have you had any good big sisterly advice?
No, I have an older brother. I'm just, you know, coming towards me.
I always say it's really cheesy, but like, just be compassionate and empathetic towards people. Like, if you don't understand something, learn about it.
Yeah.
Don't just form a, you know, judgment straight away. Because I work in academic publishing, my advice is always research. So I think I'm just going to stick with that one word, research.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to ring my brother now.
Yeah. That's something really important I need to say.
You'll have no idea what I'm talking about.
Are you guys listening to, watching, reading anything at the moment that you'd like to recommend? No pressure to my publishing friends. Recommend as good books.
anyone in publishing, you read so much.
Yeah, I guess.
Can't think behind the book I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
And I'm reading The Monarch of the Glen for a book. That's the one that I want to. It is funny, but.
I'm watching very trashy television lately because it's my stress relief. I'm so like.
Yeah, if you're in the middle of a huge project. How trashy?
I mean, I'm watching Riverdale. it's like medium level trashy, I would say.
My husband loves Riverdale. I still haven't seen it, but yeah, he's loves that.
It's I mean, I think it's good. it's just
teen drama that then goes somewhere really, really weird for a bit, and then goes back to normal, and kids on the weird stuff never happens. That's the impression I get, anyway.
Serial killers, drug wars, just everything is going on, and it's just good fun. It's delightful, and there's good music as well. They do a couple of musical episodes, which I very much enjoy.
Love a good musical episode.
We have two opposite reactions.
I'm just like, yes, sign me up. I accept this. I'm like,
I can't think of one magazine I've read lately that kind of stuck with me was, and I don't know if you've read it yet, but there's a little magazine publisher in Edinburgh called Bloodbath Lit Sign.
Oh, I've not come across them.
It's brand new. Their second issue just came out, and it's literary horror. And the first issue was on bodies, and the second issue was on demons. And what they did with the issues is they used loads of things like smoke and things to like give the paper a certain effect.
Wow.
Like not cigarette smoke, obviously, but like so it's really individual, and the stories in it are so good, so that's the one I probably recommend.
I love magazines that do something tactile with the form, because you know I read a lot of ebooks. I'm a sucker for the 99p Kindle deal of the day, but I think as we're sort of moving away from a society that prizes paper, people put so much more effort into it. It's like, you know, what you guys do with the Monstrous Regiment magazines themed around a colour. You can do really cool things with the form, and people who get it really get it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like photos, you have like photos and pictures in, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like making it more valuable to people.
Yeah.
Though I know we all know just words enough. I'm trying to get people engaged with print again. But it's working. Like, print sales are going back up, so.
Yeah, which is exciting for us.
Yes. I guess, finally, where can people find you guys?
Well, we are on Twitter at MonstrousRGMT. Yes, that's the right order of letters. And we're also on Instagram under the same handle, Facebook, and then our website is monstrous-regiment.com.
And will people be able to order the book there once the Kickstarter's done? Are there going to be extra copies that people who didn't contribute can?
Loads of copies on our website for sale.
Yay! What about yourself, Rebecca?
I misunderstood what you meant at first. Like, where can we find you? I was just going to say bye. It's usually where I'm knocking about. But mine's a tough one because I have a very long surname. But you can find me at Becky_WOJTURSKA. So, I'd be surprised if anyone finds me from that. But you can also follow my wee press horn at Horn Publishing.
And I'll look it all up and stick it in the show notes blog post as well, so you don't need to worry too much about the spelling.
Yay!
Well, thank you so much, guys, for jumping on to chat about this. I had lots of fun. I hope you did as well.
Definitely. Yeah, thanks so much for chatting with us.
Monstrous Regiment for really fun chat. The reprinted The Bible, second volume, New Testimonials, and back issues of the Monstrous Regiment literary magazine are available to order now at monstrous-regiment.com. My copies have just arrived and I can't wait to get stuck in. You can also purchase the books in person from indie booksellers such as Lighthouse and Golden Hair Books in Edinburgh. Category is Books in Glasgow and Gaze the Word in London, among others. Check the website for a full list of stockists. You can find links to follow Monstrous Regiment and writer Rebecca Wojtyrska at lastyearsgirl.pixlet.net. Just click on the big podcast button and look for episode 6, You Could Have Both. Yes, that is a Long Blonde reference, because your big sister may suck at dating advice, but she's good for music recommendations. From Your Big Sister is hosted by me, Lisa Marie Ferla, and produced and edited by me too. You can now subscribe to From Your Big Sister on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Acast and Spotify, as I just found out, which means I would love it if you rated and reviewed the show and told all your friends. It's also streaming on Podomatic, where you'll find an RSS feed, so you can subscribe via your podcatcher of choice. The show is on Twitter, at From Your Big Sister. That's From YR Big Sister, because I think it looks cute. If you have a dilemma that you need some sisterly advice on, you can send it in using the form at lastyearsgirl.pixlet.net/podcast, and you might hear the answer on a future episode. You can be as anonymous as you like. It's positively encouraged. Theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions, used under a Creative Commons license, and this show wouldn't exist without, and is dedicated to, Dominic and Marie Claire. Which reminds me, you might have to wait a bit longer than usual for the next episode, as IRL Big Sister duties call, but we'll catch up soon.